The Athletic.
Guys, sorry, you're live on Sky News. Your reaction to the win?
We lost.
Qatar lessons. It's day 6 of the World Cup and the hosts are out faster than a fan wearing a rainbow T-shirt. Elsewhere, Wales mourn again, Iran look born again, and England make us yawn again in a goalless draw with a fine-looking USA side. Also, Ener Valencia has crazy stats. We round it all up and look ahead to Saturday's matches, including Argentina trying to save their tournament against Mexico. It's Totally at the World Cup, sponsored by LiveScoreBet. Day 6 of the Qatar World Cup. Hello, listener, and hello today's Totally at the World Cup cast, Tom Williams and Liam Tharm. Hello.
Hello, James.
Hello.
What a day it's been. I mean, I know I say that every day, but today, what a day it's been. We had the earliest ever World Cup host to exit Qatar. We also had the latest ever World Cup match-winning goal in that Wales-Iran game that we're not supposed to mention, Tom.
Yes. Mm. Yes, we did. Although, I mean, technically the winning goal, but there wasn't another goal scored even later, which kind of undermines that stat slightly.
Do you think?
But I mean, it's still a stat.
I would say so. Yeah. What did you think of today, Liam?
A lot went on today. Yeah, it was. Yeah. I really enjoyed the Iran Wales game. It was two teams. I'm sure we'll get onto it, but those games sometimes where there's not always a huge amount of quality and it can descend a bit into chaos, I think, can be really good spectacles.
Excellent, excellent. We're sitting here having just witnessed another game between two teams, but there perhaps the similarities in the USA-England game, which was a little bit short on quality, and what quality there was mostly in a dark blue USA jersey. We'll be getting our reaction to that and an American take on it all from the Albite Stadium very, very shortly. But let's just run through the results on this Friday. In Group A, first set of second round matches, of course, these. Senegal beat Qatar 3-1, and with Netherlands drawing 1-1 with Ecuador later in the day in that group. That means the host Qatar are now out of their own party. In Group B, Iran beat Wales 2-0 with two late goals. The first in the 98th minute. That's a record. And then another in the 111th, because this is Qatar. A landmark game, that, by the way. It also produced the first red card and the first goal from outside the box of this World Cup so far. The other match was the USA clash with England, which was the fifth goalless draw we've had at this tournament. Just on the subject of Iran, their performance today in Qatar, here's a tweet from Goalscorer Challenge. Having seen a bit more of Iran and Qatar today, it's clear that there's a big gulf between them.
Hey, yeah, it's good.
All right then, England, USA.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
Get the chance that we're getting today. So let's just make sure of one thing, that after 90 minutes, they know who we are.
All right, that was Gerard Butler in Game of Their Lives / Miracle Match, the dramatic reenactment of the famous US 1-0 win over England in miniature rice. I don't think anyone's going to be making a movie of today's clash at the Albite Stadium. Liam, what did you take away from this encounter?
It was interesting. I was very much viewing it with, I think, more of an England hat on. And I think a lot of people had put a lot of stock into England putting six past Iran, which was a good display, but very clinical. And I think a very different test. They were very high possession again today. And I think that helped the US really against Wales, who sat off them a lot more. England turned the ball over a lot, tried to be more attacking, and they just lost possession more. So it gave the US more chance to transition. But Pulisic in particular got a lot of chances to drive at the ball, and definitely their sort of biggest attacking threat today. But overall, I think both sides had enough to, you know, have opportunities, but not really create too many clear-cut chances.
Okay, the draw is not bad for England. It just means that they need a point now against Wales on the final group game to be assured of qualification. I guess there are two ways of reading this performance. It was either England just playing for the draw that they needed, or England, after a terrific result against Iran, suddenly falling back into the dark, dismal ways of the summer, being that Ferrari driven at 15 miles an hour. Which do you think it was, Tom?
Yeah, I mean, a bit of both, I suppose. I mean, in the context of the tournament, it's not a bad result at all. You know, the US are dangerous opponents who played very well. I think the fact that England wanted to play through them probably suited the US better than than Wales had, because Wales initially sat off them and then just went very direct. And I think that US midfield is principally set up to shut down teams that want to play football, which is what England were tentatively trying to do. But that said, England are still top of the group. A draw against Wales, which is sadly well within their powers, takes them into the next round. And if we go back to last summer, Euro 2020, England's second game was a 0-0 draw against Scotland, after which they got booed off, and the papers were full of doom and gloom about how poorly they'd played and how well Scotland had done, and we all know how that tournament worked out. That said, after all the you know, sort of euphoria is probably too strong a word, but after all the positivity after the Iran game, that was a kind of, you know, bringing things back down to earth. It wasn't a particularly impressive England performance. They just seemed to lack an attacking spark completely. Harry Kane was practically invisible. I wondered whether he was worrying a bit about his ankle, because he didn't seem to be on it in quite the same way he had been in that game against Iran. And the players who performed so well against Iran, you know, Jude Bellingham, Bukayo Saka, Raheem Sterling, all very anonymous. Gareth Southgate leaves it late to make changes. So, yeah, not a particularly encouraging performance, but in the context of the tournament, nothing to really worry about, I don't think.
All right. Well, let's get a US take on the match at the Al Bayt Stadium, because there, sitting actually waiting for us in the press box, is Paul Tenorio of The Athletic. Paul, thank you so much for joining us. First of all, this game here was about, I guess, two things. One was points for qualifying, and the other was respect.
Yeah, I mean, I thought for sure the respect part was there. The way the U.S. dominated the game for the majority of the game, after the first 15 minutes or so, the U.S. was the better team. And there were some stretches late there where certainly I think the U.S. slowed and England had a grip and a chance to win it with Harry Kane. But I thought the way they asserted themselves in the game, the way they played, the way they attacked, it was really, really positive if you're a U.S. fan, and very disappointing not to get a result, because now you've got to go into the group finale against probably a very optimistic, high-flying, confident Iran team needing a win.
Although Iran weren't quite so impressive in their opening game, so we'll see how they are in that game next Tuesday. Equally, USA, who'd faded so dramatically in the second half of their clash with Wales, in this second half, as you say, look much the better side. What was the difference for you?
Well, I thought just they played more confidently. They had a better game plan. I went back and rewatched the second half against Wales, and they had moments in transition where they just weren't connecting those final passes. They were better at that today, but the same problem against Wales as against England. They have these chances and they don't put them away. One goal against Wales and a draw, no goals against England and a draw. And I think both times you feel like at the end of the day, you've left 4 points on the table if you're the U.S.
Paul, there was a lot of talk before this game about the progress of the United States with the target not just of the last 16, but also the tournament coming up in 3.5 years' time, which USA and Canada will be joint hosting. How much progress are you seeing from the team in that direction?
Well, it's a very young team, and so there's been a lot of progress made for this group, second youngest group at this World Cup. And I think when you see the players that are being sold out of MLS, when you see the level that these players are playing at now in Europe, it's clear that there's a lot of progress being made. And this group has a huge responsibility on its shoulders to show well here, for sure, and then to build on that at home at a World Cup, where maybe for the first time ever, you can start talking about how far can this U.S. team go. Usually it's how do you get through the group stage and see what happens. With a group like this, you start saying, well, how far can you go at home? So, you know, I think this first World Cup here for these players is a measuring stick, a chance to learn, a chance to gain experience and to try to gain some positives here. And then you take that and you hope you build on it in 4 years' time.
Okay, well, with any luck in 2026, you'll draw England in the group again, because England never beat you at a World Cup.
That's true. You know, as much as they love to see the U.S. in the group, they never find a way to get 3 points out of them, do they?
Paul Tenorio, you can read loads of reaction and content about this game, what it means, etc., and so on, ramifications, permutations, on theathletic.com. Liam, Phil Foden, why not?
It's an interesting one. He doesn't seem massively in favour with Southgate, does he? I'm not quite sure it was the game for him per se. I think he obviously brought on Grealish, he brought on Rashford, sort of similar sort of impact subs that have worked against Iran. But again, they looked quite tentative. There were moments where towards the end Grealish won the ball or recovered it sort of deep in the defensive third, you know, imploring him to take up some yards, sort of trying to spring a counter-attack, and seemed very sort of content to keep the ball. I think it's a system thing as well. Foden is very much a left footer that likes to play on the left, and I think does his best work there for City. In Southgate's system currently, he's got a right footer on the left in Raheem Sterling, and Saka is a left footer on the right. So he really wants those wingers to come inside, I think, make space for the fullbacks. So possibly whether we see now sort of a system switch, particularly Wales use a back five. So whether he wants to sort of match them up to try and get some more attackers in, he might go for Foden in a more advanced position.
I think if you go back to Euro 2020 and look at the starting lineups that Southgate has picked, he always picks Kane, he always picks Sterling, he usually picks Mason Mount as well. That means there's only one attacking role left in the team. And I looked this up because someone challenged me on Twitter, so I thought I'm gonna slam them down with actual cold hard data. And Foden and Saka have never started a game together in attack for England. So they're basically all the players we haven't mentioned so far are all competing for one role, in the sense that Kane and Sterling and Mount are basically nailed on. You can throw Grealish into the mix as well as one of those players competing for that one other attacking role. And sadly for Phil Foden and for Phil Foden fans, of whom there are many, because he's an absolutely wonderful footballer, he is quite far down that list. And it felt like the kind of game that was crying out for a player of Foden's inventiveness and wit and creativity. And, you know, yes, you've got Jack Grealish who came on, and you've got Marcus Rashford who brings more of a direct goal threat. But, yeah, unfortunate not to see Foden.
Mm. So England just need a point against Wales next time.
They can actually afford to lose as well, England. Ooh. And go through and lose relatively heavily because
really?
Of that goal glut against Iran.
Ah.
Just to give you even more... just to give England fans even more, you know, confidence going.
All right, USA though very much definitely need to get 3 points against Iran. Iran, who were victorious earlier today against Wales in what was possibly the game of the tournament so far. That's next.
This is the Totally Football Show, sponsored by LiveScore Bet, the home of squads. Squads is a weekly free-to-play game. You reveal 5 players across the week which make up your squad, and you can earn cash each time they score in the selected games. The cash amount is decided by LiveScore Bet's prize wheel and can range from 10p up to £50 per goal, which you can spend once the final player is revealed. Find out more and play Squads for yourself for free at LiveScoreBet.com or by downloading the LiveScore Bet app on Android and iPhone. It's over 18s only and full terms and conditions apply. Please bet responsibly and be gambleaware.org.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
On Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Smart Speaker, and now ad-free on The Athletic, this is The Totally Football Show with James Richardson.
Daniel Story describing this one as all of sport in one game. Agony, ecstasy, pain, grief, protest, joy, resentment. I mean, he goes on for a bit, but I mean, there's everything. And it did really have everything, didn't it? Including heartbreak for Tom Williams.
Yes. Yeah, it did. I did find myself thinking as the game wore on that if I wasn't feeling quite as nervous as I was at that point and so consumed by stress, that it would probably be quite an enjoyable game to watch for the neutral, because it was quite an open game. I mean, I think Iran were worthy winners in the end. I don't think you could really complain about that. I mean, the real frustration for Wales fans was that Wales just didn't turn up. There was a positive halftime reaction in that opening game against the US, and you thought, well, that's a bit of the Wales that, you know, we've got to know and love these last few years, and the late equaliser that Gareth Bale scored from the penalty spot. But Wales just didn't show up at all today.
Iran, by contrast, looked like a team transformed from their opening game.
Yeah, I think that was maybe a slightly false reflection on them against England. A really, really good side. Carlos Queiroz, of course, has got them largely playing quite defensively, but generally really, really good at that. So good, as we saw today, at sort of sitting off teams, can very much hit them on the counter-attack. And that really just became the pattern of the second half, was wave after wave. And there were points where, you know, the Welsh midfield was really stretched. I thought they probably should have made some subs early to try and control that, because it felt like it was... not quite waiting to happen, but they were just allowing too many of these transitions, too many of these counter-attacks, and eventually they sort of got broken down. But I think they needed to do something to tweak that earlier.
Okay. Helping that breakdown was the fact that Wayne Hennessy picked up a red card. Hennessy pulling off another tribute to a famous German, if you will, with his Schumacher-esque tackle on...
another evil German.
Yeah, on Mediterranean. And eventually got the red for that. Belatedly, but he walked. And then even then, it still took until, as we mentioned earlier, the 98th minute before that poor clearance from Joe Allen allowed Chesney to beat Danny Ward. And away they go. And then another one came afterwards, because by that point, Wales were caught trying to find an equaliser.
Yeah, I mean, by that point of the game, I think that the feeling from a Wales perspective was that we had rode our luck quite a lot, notably in that sort of 7 second passage of play where Iran hit the post twice and then Sardar Azmoun hits the rebound against Wayne Hennessy from a distance of about 3 yards. And I think at that point, a nil-nil would have felt like a decent outcome in the circumstances. So yeah, when that I mean, beautifully struck shot by Chesney flashed in, it did feel like a bit of a sickener. And at the same time, you can't begrudge Iran having this moment, having this victory, knowing what they're going through. And I still find, you know, watching them sing or not sing the anthem and you know, sort of trying to get a sense of how the crowd are reacting, I still don't fully understand what is going on. But it's obviously an extremely tense, extremely uncomfortable situation for their players to be in. And you know, that kind of explosion of joy at the end, I you know, even as a very disappointed Wales fan, you couldn't begrudge them that.
Right, and a lot of the Welsh fans in the stadium were actually applauding the Iranian players at the end of as well, which was lovely to see. But on that note, of course, this game coming against the backdrop of the protests back home and the brutal repression that's going on of the protesters. Early today, I spoke to comedian Omid Jalili, who's among the UK's most vocal Team Melli supporters, but also one of the most outspoken opponents of the Iranian government's crackdown. And he gave us his thoughts on what was essentially a bittersweet day. First of all, purely as a football fan, how did you feel at around 11:58 UK time this morning?
I lost my mind completely. I was in a hotel room and I started screaming. And you have to know, these are all very happy, sad, confusing times for fans of the Iranian national football team. We call them Team Melli. Team Melli means the national team. Now, what's happened is that's been conflated now a little bit with what's going on, the protests in Iran. And we do see them as two separate entities, the Islamic regime of Iran and Iran. They're a terrorist regime. I mean, there's no question, and no one's going to stop saying that until they're gone. So what we had a situation today, the national anthem, there's been a lot made about the way they sing or don't sing the national anthem. Today, what we saw was a group of players who were moving their lips and were pretending to sing a national anthem. I've just seen Ecuador sing there. They were belting out their national anthems. They've obviously been told, you better move your lips at least. You have to understand, with a regime like this, they're being threatened. Their families are being threatened. So they're going through the motions when it comes to paying lip service to the odd thing they have to do nationally. But it's very clear they're all anti-regime. They are playing for the people. And we saw it today. I know that the stadium was hot. 30 degrees, which suits the Iranian players than the Welsh. But still, what we saw was a proper performance. And we didn't see a performance against England because the fans were jeering this Iranian team because they saw they were associated with the Islamic regime. And if you can imagine playing when your own fans are screaming at you, you don't really have much of a heart. I was amazed by the performance today. And I have to say, I was very happy. And James, I'll just say this one last thing. I'm sorry I'm monologuing, but but this is very important to say this. We now feel that the longer and this team stays in the World Cup, the more we can shine a light on what's been going on, because what's been going on in Iran is horrific. It's been going on for nearly third month now, and it hasn't really achieved the global news that it should have been getting, but it is now. Right. And I think that's also something to do with the Iranian football team.
Hundreds of deaths from protests today. The UN announcing they're going to be sending investigators to try and further shed light on the situation there. And you mentioned the dangers, the pressures that the players are under, and that was underlined just yesterday when we heard news of what one of their international teammates being arrested for tarnishing the reputation of the national team because he said he supported the protests. The captain of the team that's there in Qatar, Haj Safi, has publicly backed the protests, as they should know we are with them and we support them. How much do you think those messages are meaning to people back in Iran? How much is that getting through?
Not much, unfortunately, from what I can see. What's happening now, there's some awful images of these Basijis and security forces standing on top of armoured vehicles waving the Iranian flag. And these are the same people who, from tomorrow, will be killing more people. As we speak, they're killing people in the Kurdistan regions of Iran. So it is disgusting, a lot of us, that they are hijacking this, because it's not their team. And this is the problem you have when there are these revolutions happening. The people which want to get rid of, they're celebrating too. But it's clear. It's clear to me anyway. And also, the protests they've made before have been silenced. Sardar Azmoun, who you saw hit the post today before the right back hit the other post, he plays for Bayer Leverkusen, and he came out very clearly saying he was against the regime and denounced what was going on. Why are you killing people? This is ridiculous. And he was made to apologise and take the post down. The Iranian team, before their warm-up against Senegal, they all wore these tracksuits before the announcement to cover up, before the anthem, to cover up the Islamic regime flag. So they've done, as far as I'm concerned, they've done enough to show that they're not with the Islamic regime. And I think that is actually a message that's not really getting through to the people of Iran, because whenever I tweet something about them, a lot of tweets are for the team, but there's a lot of people saying, how dare you? This is not our team. They don't represent us. So I don't think it's fully getting through, but I think that podcasts like this and more people speaking out, I think the message will get through.
Okay. Omid, as a fan of the Iran team, as you say, it's confusing times, but they have an enormous chance now to reach the knockouts for the first time. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, very excited. I mean, they did beat America in 1998, and I remember going bananas when that happened, but they didn't qualify. They just beat USA, and that was enough. And, you know, and if you told me, if you beat America and then, you don't go through, is that enough? Most Iranian fans would say that's enough. It's not enough now. And look, this World Cup is political. Now we've banned Russia. It's a political World Cup. Iran should have been banned. There's no question. For a number of reasons, they violated many FIFA statutes. But now that they're there, and if they are doing something for the people and to highlight the protests, then it's even, I can't imagine what would happen to that country if they get through to the second phase. I'm not saying it'll stop the protests, and I'm not saying that the regime will topple. I'm just saying it's going to get tasty. That's all I can say.
Yeah, and at the very least, it will bring a bit of happiness in a really, really dark time for the country. Omid, brilliant. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Great talking to you, mate. Cheers.
Liam, what do you think then? What are Team Melli's chances of beating USA?
I think it's a really, really exciting game. Obviously, I know there's underlying narratives with it, but style-wise, they're very clashy. You've got USA, who, as they showed against Wales, primarily like to be a high possession side. They like to be expansive and play lots of passes, whereas Iran are really content to sit off teams and hit them in transition, which they showed against Wales. And I think that's the perfect thing at the World Cup, when you get these different clashing styles, can make for really exciting games, because they're going to look to exploit each other where each other are weak and vulnerable, and there's going to be lots of good individual battles going on as well.
All right, but that's the kind of team that USA struggle against, no? As they did indeed against Wales in the opening game.
Yeah, exactly that. I think we saw tonight playing against England how they do benefit when teams are more expansive. So whether they try to sort of tweak their approach and maybe they try and go with less possession, I think it's going to create a real headache really for Greg Berhalter in particular.
Well, something you saw, something I noticed watching Iran today was the sophistication of their attacking transitions. And as a fan of the team they were playing against, it's actually quite terrifying how quickly they suddenly switch onto being on the front foot when they recover the ball, you know, in their defensive third. And that wasn't something we really saw too much against England. And yeah, it's something that they will, you know, will probably have opportunities to do against the US.
And will their goalkeeper, first choice goalkeeper, now be back from concussion protocol as well?
I don't know. It's a very good question because Hosseini, who was in for him today, looked excellent, I thought.
But he can't throw the ball 70 yards.
That's true. That is true. All right, Iran against USA is coming up at 7 o'clock UK time next Tuesday, while at the same time you'll have Wales against England. Tom, 64 years and it could be all over with that game.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, there is still hope. And for Wales fans who are nostalgic for a time when our qualification campaigns would basically be over, barring mathematical impossibilities or mathematical improbabilities, this is a little taste of what that was like, in that we can still go through, but we need to beat England and we need a draw in the other game, and those are the only circumstances in which we'll qualify. And just to sort of make a wider point about Wales, I think something that really came through watching that game today was that something that we've been very grateful for in the last few years as, you know, Wales fans has been this sense that the Euro 2016 generation, albeit, you know, getting on a little bit, are all still there, are all still hanging around, and they're in place to pass the baton on to this new generation of younger players, your Nico Williamses, your Brennan Johnsons, etc. And I think what we actually saw in that game against Iran today was that Euro 2016 generation, it looked very spent. I mean, you can understand why Rob Page would be reluctant to substitute Aaron Ramsey or Gareth Bale, because they are, Bale in particular, and as we said on the podcast on Monday, moments players capable of just producing a goal from nowhere. But they were both passengers today. And in, you know, sort of modern international football, in any sort of elite standard of football, you can't afford to carry two players around with you. And that's what Wales were doing. And yeah, if this is the end of our World Cup, I think it'll be interesting to see what role those two players in particular are going to play, you know, once we start looking to the qualifiers for Euro 2024.
Right, indeed. Okay, that was Group B. Group A also had its second set of matches on this Friday, listener, apparently. So let's touch on those next.
Incredible game. When they play with a false nine, it changes everything.
A false nine, eh? What's that then?
Well, it's you know, it's what he's a nine, but he's not really a nine in the area. And sorry, I just got to take that.
Urgent football question? Call the Athletic Emergency Football Hotline. 0800 0433 433. News, insights, analysis. The Athletic. Know the game, love the game.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
You're listening to The Totally Football Show with James Richardson. Sponsored by LiveScore Bet. You can get the latest football betting odds at livescorebet.com. It's over 18s only. Please bet responsibly and be gambleaware.org.
Netherlands, Ecuador, earlier on Friday. Ecuador, eh? Do you like a bit of Ecuador, Liam?
Very much so. I sort of personally have more allegiances as a Brighton fan with a few Brightonians in there. But I think they're... I think they benefited particularly from Mane's absence from Senegal, which is, I think they were in a real big shootout, those two countries, for second place. And obviously they'll meet now in the final group stage game, which again is still exciting because either side could win it and go through. But I think they're a nice, they're a very young team, the youngest South American team, I believe, to qualify. A lot of good, exciting, dynamic players, some good 1v1 players, good technical players. They're really well balanced is the biggest compliment I can give them.
All right, well, they have a 1-1 draw against Netherlands. They picked up some big 1-1 draws of late, done it against Brazil, Argentina. This one here saw the Netherlands taking the lead with a brilliant goal from Cody Gakpo, who's doing a lot of that of late. An XG, if you're a fan, an XG on that goal of 0.04. So it's quite remarkable that he managed to convert it.
And on his weaker foot as well.
On his weaker foot as well.
Not much of a weak foot, is it?
You can do that, yeah. Yeah.
Second strong foot.
The second half wasn't long underway, though, when Ecuador equalised through who else but Enner Valencia.
He wasn't this good, was he, when he was at West Ham and at Everton? We haven't accidentally overlooked sort of one of the great streets won't forget Premier League careers, because I have almost no recollection whatsoever of the time he spent in the Premier League, and he looks like an absolute world beater in an Ecuador shirt.
It's not just now either, because check the stats out. He has scored all of Ecuador's last six World Cup goals, which obviously extends back beyond before this tournament. In fact, he is the joint top scorer in the World Cup since the 2014 tournament, even though he didn't feature in the 2018 edition. I'm sorry, what?
That's decent going.
That's not bad.
Who's he joint top scorer with? Or are we supposed to guess?
Well, have a guess. It's not going to be difficult, Tom. A certain Lionel Messi and a certain Cristiano Ronaldo.
Oh, yeah, there we go.
That's remarkable, isn't it? And then, but just as we're saying, just as we've discovered or rediscovered the genius that is Enner Valencia, he goes off injured. He looked pretty distraught about it. We haven't had a verdict yet from medical staff, unless, Tom, you've heard something. Nope. So I guess it's one of those wait and sees. Ecuador, as a result of that draw, need a point against Senegal to qualify. What about the Netherlands? What did you make of their performance in this game?
Well, I mean, after Gakpo's goal, which was quite nicely constructed as well, Nathan Aké sort of breaks the lines with a pass out from the left-sided centre-back position and kind of bounces around a bit. David Klaassen's involved. Gakpo takes over and fizzes that fantastic shot inside the left-hand post from outside the box. That was their last shot on target in the game. And this was noticeable as well in their opening game against Senegal, with Memphis Depay not being fit enough to start matches. In both games, he started on the bench and then come on in the second half. They do really lack an attacking focal point, and there aren't that many goals in the squad. And as talented as Gakpo obviously is, there's quite a lot of pressure on him to score goals because, you know, okay, you know, Steven Bergwijn is capable of scoring goals as well, but you take Depay's goals out of that team, and you can't really see where the goals are going to come from. And even when he comes on, because he has played such little football before the tournament, he finds it hard to impose himself, and he barely got a kick after he came on, and you're kind of waiting for him to spark the team, and he just doesn't really seem capable of doing it.
I think there's two really interesting things with this Netherlands team. You mentioned about the lack of sort of a focal point. He did call up, Van Gaal's called up Luke de Jong and Wout Weghorst. So he's got two real, if you want to call them, out-and-out number nines. And they feel kind of like the same type of profile striker twice, which feels like a weird inclusion to have both and then not to use either of them. He's got Vincent Janssen, who started against Senegal and then didn't play. So it's sort of a weirdly constructed forward setup. He switched to this back three sort of during the Nations League. You know, got a back three with Cody Gakpo in the 10. It's got these wing backs that look quite imbalanced because you've got Daley Blint on one side, who's a lot more technical but less dynamic, and then Denzel Dumfries, who has about four lungs just running up and down the wing the whole time. So it's sort of weirdly constructed but quite functional. And then I think you've got a lot out of Tim Koopmeiners and Frankie de Jong in the middle, who are just two, de Jong in particular, outstanding sort of ball progressors. And I think they're really sort of good at getting back to front, whereas they haven't always got the cutting edge.
But is it adding up to the sum of its parts at the moment for you?
Perhaps. I think definitely not in these two games. I think they had two shots in the whole game, which I think was big credit to Ecuador. I don't want to pretend this performance is in a vacuum, but that was, I think, the lowest of a European side since the 1966 World Cup.
Good Lord.
Which is quite damning.
Here's Duncan Alexander with one of his XG stats. Netherlands have less XG after two games than Kiefer Moore does.
Wow.
I mean, he's not a country. Is a once-in-a-generation player, so we shouldn't be surprised, but yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, there you go, Netherlands. Some improvement to do, but they're still on track. The other game in that group saw Senegal ending Qatar's hopes of knockout football, a 3-1 victory, which did, of course, though, see Qatar getting their first shot on target and their first goal. When they kind of woke, they woke up late to their own party, if you will, and it was all...
And then promptly fell asleep again.
They're the first host nation ever to lose two group stage games. They did have that penalty denied, though, early on. And I kind of cynically cast suspicions about what the refereeing would be like for the Qatar games before the tournament got underway. That looked brutal. The ref didn't even go and check it on the VAR screen. Still, Senegal, though, you mentioned the fact they're less of a force without Sadio Mane. But still, a 3-1 win.
Yeah, they did enough. And I think they looked quite good against Netherlands for sort of 80 minutes as well. Mendy came up quite big today with a couple of good saves, which could be really, really important against Ecuador. So that I think is really going to be, you know, in the same we've got in Group B, USA against Iran is going to be a real big shootout match between those two. Definitely the same in Group A as well, as far as Senegal and Ecuador are concerned.
Yeah, Senegal have got to win that. And, you know, obviously... We're approaching the tournament with a lot of really positive momentum as the freshly crowned African champions, having beaten Egypt in that qualifying playoff. And then there's the blow of, you know, losing their talisman Sadio Mane to injury and then conceding those two late goals against the Netherlands. And, you know, they do feel like the African team who are most likely to go deep into the tournament if things come together. But from what we've seen of Ecuador in these two games, and that crazy stat that was the first goal they conceded in something like 11 hours of football or something... You know, not an ideal opponent to be coming up against when you are shorn of your attacking talisman as Senegal are. But at least they'll go into that game with, you know, with a win and
with
a
momentum.
Few goals under their belts and a bit of momentum.
Yeah, and they've got that eclectic lineup. I'm a big fan of this. They've got Abule Diaw, who was on the score sheet from Salernitana, and Anyela Spores, Famara Djigio. Is that how it is?
Djigio. Formerly Bristol City, I believe, yeah.
Is that right?
Yes.
And then Sheffield United's Illiman Ndiaye, who... 3 years ago was on the books of Boreham Wood but couldn't make their side in the National League, and now he's playing in the
There you go. Never
World
give
Cup.
Up on your dreams.
There Absolutely. You go. There you go. Something for Wales to cling on to ahead of England game.
Should play for Boreham Wood.
Thanks a lot.
All right. Well, that's Friday's action. There's more second round fun to come in Saturday's four games. We'll be looking ahead at those next.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. The Athletic is the only place you can read articles by Daniel Taylor, Amy Lawrence, Phil Hay, James Pearce, Ollie Kay, and the very best football writers around.
A little bit of news in amongst the other injury talk that we've had. Neymar this Friday confirmed as being out for the next two matches for Brazil. That's rotten luck, isn't it? And it always seems to happen to him at World Cups. 2014... got injured in the quarterfinal against Colombia, broke his back, I think. Didn't he not fracture a vertebrae or something? And then he had that long-term injury before the tournament in 2018, so he only just kind of made it and didn't really have the impact that Brazil had hoped. And now injured against Serbia after they, well, effectively kicked lumps out of him.
Yeah, I mean, you know, people do tend to sometimes enjoy Neymar's misfortunes.
People sometimes feel that he might act up a little bit, but I think this might be a demonstration that he might do that, but he also gets kicked around a lot.
Yeah, and you know, he is one of the most spectacularly entertaining footballers in the game, and his style of play is all about drawing challenges and taking risks, and we've seen him suffer injuries like this one. You know, playing for PSG, his first two seasons were ended in, you know, the middle of the winter because, you know, he was caught in a rough tackle, and, you know, that was it for his, you know, his metatarsal or his ankle or whatever. And it's a great shame. You know, for the tournament, for Brazil as well, having started so impressively with that win against Serbia, you know, Richarlison getting his two goals and all the positivity around Brazil. That, I suppose, the one thing you would say is that if there is any squad in the tournament that is well placed to
absorb that kind of
absence, it is Brazil, because you know the list of attacking players they have is absurd. But it's a great pity for Neymar, and yeah, obviously hope that he will be back if and when they make it to the knockout round.
Yeah.
Just for anyone that's wondering, he got fouled 9 times against it, which is, you know, sometimes a whole team might get that in a game, as collectively you get fouled a number of times. It's a not all of them were being kicked extremely hard, but it's quite unpleasant to go through, I imagine, psychologically as well. He must get really sort of fed up when he's spoken about, oh, this possibly being his last World Cup and unhappiness around playing. I can't imagine he has a great time being kicked by people.
Indeed not. Okay, Saturday's action then. At 10 a.m. UK time, you've got Group D getting underway well, the second round of matches anyway, Tunisia-Australia. Australia got beaten by France in their opener. Tunisia had that draw with Denmark. France and Denmark will meet each other at 4 o'clock UK time. The Danes have already beaten the French twice of late in the Nations League. So that's going to be an interesting one. In Group C, Poland take on Saudi Arabia. The incredible Saudi Arabia. Can the Saudis earn themselves another national holiday? That's the big question there. That's 1 o'clock UK time. And then at 7, crikey, Argentina-Mexico. Wow. Who are you looking forward to seeing in action in these Saturday games, Liam, Tom?
I'm really looking forward to seeing France-Denmark. It'll be a really exciting game. I thought France were quite good fun against Australia. They had Theo Hernandez when he came on really high and wide, and Pavard was a bit deeper. So I thought they were quite cool in how they were trying to, you know, play a bit lopsided or a bit wonky. But Denmark, obviously, you said, beaten them twice already. I think really exciting. France are a bit more of a back three then. So how they sort of now respond to Deschamps going back to a back four will be interesting. But then again, I think Denmark have switched from a back four in the Nations League to a back three. So it's like, both sides look very flexible, dealing with injuries and bits and pieces like that. So I think that'll be make for a really good game.
Fair enough. Tom?
Yeah, as you can say, looks like France are going to make a couple of defensive changes. Rafa Varane's probably going to come in for Ibrahima Konate at centre-back. And it sounds like Jules Koundé is going to be picked instead of Benjamin Pavard, who was very blatantly at fault for the one goal that Australia got in that opening game, and who is generally felt to be, in an era of extremely dynamic fullbacks, a very undynamic fullback. But sadly, France, and at a time when England have got about 15 or 16 exceptionally good right backs, France don't really have any good right backs. And they've tested Jules Koundé out in the past at right back, and he hasn't really convinced. So that's a bit of a problem position. But looks like Deschamps is going to give him a run at the very least.
There you go. That's 4 o'clock. 7 o'clock then, it is Argentina and Mexico as Scaloni's side try and rescue their World Cup after one of the all-time huge tournament upsets. Fallout continuing from that defeat. Another loss at the hands of Mexico would be catastrophic. We're joined now by Sebastian Garcia, who's a sports journalist in Buenos Aires. The last time Argentina were beaten in the opening match of a World Cup was 1990, and you still went on to make the final. However, were you to lose against Mexico, that could be it.
Yeah, it could be game over. I don't even want to think about the prospect of losing against Mexico on Saturday, which could very well happen. I guess a lot will depend on the reaction, the psychological aspect, the mental bounce back ability from the team. And one of the things that we are thinking about is whether Scaloni will make a lot of changes. I, for one, not only I think he won't be making a lot of changes, but also I think he shouldn't be making a lot of changes. And that is completely opposite to the example you just gave me, because after the Cameroon defeat, there were 5 changes and the team completely changed from the first game to the second one. And then the second one was against the USSR, and a goalkeeper got fractured. You know, it was one really bad thing happening, because you lost your starting goalkeeper, the World Cup winning goalkeeper from 86, Pumpido. But he got replaced by Sergio Goycochea, and he became this penalty kick expert, and he won 2 shootouts, and Argentina made it all the way to the final, as you mentioned. So, you know, let's hope for a bounce back from the team without anybody getting fractured, of course, and see if we can find a rhythm and go back to the basics, because that's what everybody thinks Argentina should be doing. Go back to the basics, try to play the same way that we've been playing for 36 unbeaten games with the Copa America trophy and the Finalissima title against Italy at Wembley. So I still think there's a lot of upside from Argentina, and that we shouldn't be changing a lot.
Sebastian, there was so much talk internationally about how this could be Messi's World Cup. Was that something that people in Argentina really bought into? And as such, if it was to go wrong against Mexico, how big a blow would it be to you?
Oh, my God. As I said, I don't even want to think about the prospect of losing on Saturday and getting knocked out after only 2 games. But going to the main question, the first question that you ask, I don't remember ever going to a World Cup in such a state of absolute hype. Everybody is pumped. Everybody got behind this team. It hasn't always been the case, whether because the manager wasn't very well liked in the past, there were cases like that, whether the team wasn't doing very well, whether we couldn't find a rhythm in the qualifiers, so the optimism levels were not up there. But never in my life, I like to say I'm 11 World Cups old. I measure my life and my age in World Cups. So I'm 11 World Cups old, and I can tell you, I've never seen such a unanimous backing from the general public, the media, especially the media, because normally it's the opposite. They're never getting behind the team. I've never seen the general public, the fans and everybody 100% behind the team. And I still think everybody is. Argentina just needed a little spark to go back to being normal and go back to being hopeful of it becoming the World Cup that Messi deserves to win.
Sebastian Garcia, wow. These must be tense days in Argentina as they wait to see if that was just a kind of a momentary blip, just the fruit of one or two fine line offside decisions or something more serious. Mexico, to be fair, their opponents didn't look too exciting in their clash with Poland.
No, needed a penalty save, of course, to keep a clean sheet. I think this is not one of the best current generations of Mexican players. And again, I think as the best part for me, I think enjoying when you get these big upsets isn't just that game itself, but then the knock-on effect that it has and the jeopardy now. So Argentina needing to go out and, you know, they can't even afford to fringe up any more points. They need to be winning games. And I think that's really going to be good for some of the opposition that they're playing, knowing that you can just really be there to spoil as much as for your own success, to really sort of have a downfall with these big nations.
Crikey.
And it is the beauty of tournament football, because that was a freak result in a way. I mean, obviously a fantastic achievement for Saudi Arabia, but Saudi Arabia's XG in that game was 0.14. And Argentina's was 2.2. So, you know, had any one of those very narrow offside decisions,
right,
some of them, one of them at least was extremely narrow, gone Argentina's way, they probably would have won that game quite comfortably, but yeah, they didn't, they lost it. And because it's such a big country, because there is so much focus on them, that pressure is there. And while Mexico aren't quite as swashbuckling as some previous Mexico teams we've seen at the World Cup, they are, you know, very experienced, very well organised. They generally look after the ball quite well. They can be a frustrating team. So, yeah, it could be a nervy one.
All right. It'll be interesting to see as well how Saudi Arabia fare when they take on Poland, if they can leave Lewandowski, you're wandering around offside, as well as they did the Argentine attackers. Anyway, all of that will be happening on Saturday. And, of course, we'll be back here Saturday night to review it all for you. Tonight, may I say thank you very much to Liam and Tom and Paul Tenorio and Omid Jalili and, of course, Sebastian Garcia as well. You, listener, especially you, and a bit for producer Charlie too. We'll be back Saturday night. Hope you'll be joining us then. Bye-bye for now.
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Listen ad-free on the Athletic app, discover bonus video content by searching for The Totally Football Show on YouTube, and see the very latest subscription offers at theathletic.com/totally. The Totally Football Show is an Athletic Media Company production and sponsored by LiveScoreBet. Get the latest football betting odds at livescorebet.com. It's over 18s only. Please bet responsibly and be gambleaware.org.
The Athletic.